Joseph Cardinal Manzenti must be considered one of the strongest defenders of faith the 20th century has produced. He is affectionately referred to as the Dry Martyr of Hungary. In 1945, Pope Pius XII appointed him the Cardinal Primate of Hungary, just as the threat of Stalinist terrorism was beginning to spread throughout Eastern Europe. The Cardinal continued his spirited and very strong defense of freedom until 1948, when communist totalitarianism finally vented its rage and anger against him. He was arrested for conspiracy and espionage. He was tortured. He was brainwashed. He was put through the mockeries of a show trial. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. And he spent 8 years in solitary confinement. After the abortive Hungarian uprising of 1956, Cardinal Manzenti became a semi-voluntary prisoner in the American embassy in Budapest, where he would spend 15 years of his life. When he was released, he lived in a seminary in Vienna, and he spent the remainder of his life telling his remarkable story to the world. And in any series on defenders of faith in word and deed, Joseph Cardinal Manzenti must certainly be included. The cardinal took his name from the town of his birth, the town of Menzent, in Vas County in Hungary. He was born there March 29, 1892. His father, János Pem, was a farmer who owned some 25 acres, on which he grew wine grapes and other crops. His mother's name was Borbála Kovács. She was going to live a very lengthy life, and she was going to share with her son many of the crosses that the good Lord was going to ask him to undertake in life. Both sides of the cardinal's family had very deep roots in Hungary. They had lived through the dual monarchy, which was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And Hungary at the time of the cardinal's birth in the late 19th century was, on paper at least, a constitutional parliamentary state. In point of fact, it was anything but that. It was a government which was controlled by the wealthy, vested aristocracy, if you will. And it was that kind of a world into which Joseph Manzenti and his brothers and sisters were born. He himself grew up a very, very fine student, a young man who was conspicuous for his activity in the Catholic youth movement and the Marian Sodality, a young man who entered the seminary quite early, was ordained to the priesthood, and was immediately assigned parish duties. "The priestly office," he writes, "was a source of profound joy to me. My instruction was well received, my sermons evoked response, and many believers came to confession and Mass. I was especially happy when, even in cases of those who seemed to have hopelessly fallen out with God, with the church, and with themselves, I was able to revive faith by persuasion and guidance." That is not the statement of a proud man. That is the statement of a very humble man who allowed the good Lord to use him and to work through him. Well, shortly after his ordination to the priesthood and his parish work, he was assigned as a high school Latin teacher in a high school, or as the Hungarians would call it, a gymnasium. And in 1919, there was an attempt on the part of the Soviets to establish a Soviet republic. Now, of course, the Soviet Republic of Russia was only 2 years old, but they were already trying to infiltrate in Hungary. And young Father Manzenti was asked to establish a newspaper and to begin writing critical editorials against this attempted Soviet uprising as early as 1919. He did that, and he was already a marked man. "Throughout the country," he writes, when the communists came in 1919, "hostages were taken from among the opponents of the regime. I was one of them. In the middle of the night, a police inspector, accompanied by two patrolmen, pulled me out of bed and shouted in an official tone and with an official look, but in bad Hungarian, 'You are under arrest.' I replied that I had been so since February 9th, 1919, and asked what this outlay of governmental authority was all about." Well, he had a brief period of incarceration under the Soviets, but that attempted Soviet takeover of the government in 1919 did not work. There was a strong force of counter-revolution that wanted the Austro-Hungarian Empire reestablished once again, and there was a civil war in Hungary in 1919, and the Soviet occupiers were very quickly put down. A dictatorship ruled for some years thereafter. And during these years, the church, of course, was relatively free from 1920 on. And from 1920 on, the still young Father Menzenti was allowed an opportunity to grow in prestige, to have a reputation for holiness, to have a reputation as a strong, outspoken champion in defense of the church. But this was his baptism by fire, if you will, in 1919, when there was this attempted Soviet threat to take over the Hungarian government. The years went on, the decades went on. In late 1943, or perhaps early 1944, Count Janos Mikes, who was one of Hungarian's very well-known bishops, brought Joseph Menzenti to the attention of the papal nuncio in Hungary. And when he had been brought to the attention of the papal nuncio did his work, and our Holy Father, Pope Pius XII, appointed Joseph Menzenti as the Bishop of Veszprém. It was the time in the 40s when Hitler and the Nazis were gaining force daily and waging their campaign, as you remember so well, of Jewish extermination. In June of 1944, Jews living in Budapest were ordered into the ghettos. Bishop Menzenti, along with his fellow bishops in the Hungarian hierarchy, lost no time whatsoever in responding to Hitler and what he was doing, and this is what they wrote. When innate rights, such as the right to life, human dignity, personal freedom, the free exercise of religion, freedom of work, livelihood, property, and so forth, or rights acquired by legal means, are unjustly prejudiced, either by individuals, by associations, or even by the representatives of the government, the Hungarian bishops, as is their duty, raise their protesting voices and point out that these rights are conferred not by individuals, not by associations, not even by the representatives of the government, but by God Himself. These rights cannot be taken away by any person or by any earthly power. A very, very strong statement then in defense of the Jews, really, on the part of the Hungarian bishops, who, as you might very well imagine, were not listened to at all. In fact, the protest of the Hungarian bishops was ignored. Posters began to be hung on churches announcing that divine services would be held in the city of Budapest in thanksgiving for the successful liberation of the city of Veszprém and all other Hungarian cities from the Jews. The bishop of Veszprém, Joseph Menzenti, protested vigorously. He insisted that Mass not be offered, the Te Deum not be sung, or religious services not be held in any of the churches of the Diocese of Veszprém, while such offensive posters were allowed to be publicly displayed. His action hardly went unnoticed, as he recounts. A statement was issued to the effect that I had been arrested because I offered resistance to the authority and their decisions, and to government officials, and because I tried to organize a protest march in order to incite the populace to violence. Public order and safety had been gravely endangered by my actions. Here was the cardinal strongly, strongly protesting the action of the Nazis against the Hungarian Jews in the Diocese of Veszprém. He was a great hero then, was he not, to the Jewish people, for the Jewish people, and for this incredible campaign that was being waged against them. Hence, the bishop was imprisoned again for a brief period of time for his actions. Well, while he was in prison the second time in the mid-40s, the communists were at it once again. So we went from the communists to the Nazis, back to the communists again. Look at how the country of Hungary has been plagued. The communist forces were moving in on Budapest, the Hungarian capital, and on other Hungarian cities, and the bishop was just barely able to make it back to his diocese before the communists were were set to take over the Hungarian government. When the communists crossed the borders of historic Hungary in late 1944, they were attempting to show their best colors. They issued a statement as they swooped in and took over. And here was their statement. "Hungarians, the Red Army calls upon you to remain where you are and continue your peaceful work. The clergy and the faithful can carry on the exercise of their religion unhindered." Well, the wording of that statement on the part of the communists was very quickly evident to Bishop Menzenti. Religious services in Hungary would be allowed to continue. However, any of the cultural, social, and charitable work that the church was engaged in would be interfered with and probably would even be halted. On the 20th of August, 1945, there was in the city of Budapest an unmistakable repudiation of communism by Hungarian Catholics. Bishop Menzenti remembered this and wrote about it in his memoirs. He said, "On that day, 500,000 believers followed the uncorrupted right hand of St. Stephen, while hundreds of thousands lined the route of the procession. Budapest was declaring in a thunderous voice, 'The most precious possession of our nation is the heritage that the sainted king has left behind. Therefore, we stand fast by Christianity, and we are not going to make a home in our country for atheism or for materialism.'" They were speaking, the Hungarian people, and they were speaking loud and clear. But nonetheless, as we come into 1945, the communists were making very significant inroads day after day after day. They infiltrated the churches. They took part in processions. They actually got up in Catholic churches and received Holy Communion. They tried to ingratiate themselves with the clergy. They began to harass the Catholic press. They said no more newspapers will be allowed to be published in this nation of Hungary without the expressed permission of the commandant of the Red Army. And they, in the end, would only allow two Catholic newspapers to remain being published in Hungary. They even influenced the area of morality. They said separation would now be a grounds for divorce for a married couple, even if the married couple had done absolutely nothing themselves to bring about the separation. So the communists were then influencing every single aspect, avenue, area of life for the Hungarian people. On September 8th, 1945, Bishop Menzenti learned from the president of the Hungarian Episcopal Conference that the Holy Father wished him to move and to take over the Archdiocese of Esztergom. By doing that, he would become the primate of the Hungarian people. He asked for 24 hours to think about it before he accepted. "When I gave my consent," he wrote, "I was trusting wholeheartedly in our people, brave defenders of their faith, who had so often and so movingly proved their attachment to Christianity. But I confess that I was also hoping somewhat to obtain support from the Allied Control Commission, which after the armistice became the supreme authority and the highest power in our defeated nation. Representatives of the military missions of the Western powers sat on this commission alongside the Russians." Well, with Russian control a reality in Hungary, the occupying forces said that they would accept a government in which the communists had a voice and in which the small landowners of Hungary had a voice. And for a few months anyway, the small landowners of Hungary took the communists at their word, and they tried to form a joint government. And as you can well imagine, the small landowning party of Hungary was so absolutely intimidated that before long at all, the communists had indeed taken not only full military control in Hungary, but indeed full political control. Cardinal Menzenti knew very well the challenges he faced from 1945 on, and he writes this. "In Christian circles, Marxist tenets gain a foothold only when religion has lost its place as a determinant force in social life. It is well known that people who have become uncertain about their beliefs will be on the lookout for new and stronger premises. In such cases, Marxism seems like salvation. The waverer hopes that dialectical materialism will supply the answers to those questions religion and metaphysics leave as mysteries and do not answer. So with this in mind, the cardinal began a plan for intensifying the religious fervor and the religious life of the entire Hungarian nation. He instituted a campaign of prayer and penance in all of the dioceses of the Hungarian nation, and it was so successful that it even attracted a large number of non-Catholics. Only a praying humanity, he wrote, can build a better world. I am not now thinking merely of such external things as houses, bridges, streets, cables, and the like, but I am thinking of relations with our fellow men and with our own inner selves. We must fit into our planning and our building self-sacrificing enthusiasm and the power of prayer. Prayer can intensify physical and spiritual forces. It is a power that can even overcome the laws of nature. What a tremendously powerful man then Menzeti was. He was the man the Hungarian people needed. There's no question about it. And from that point on, as you can very well imagine, the cardinal was surely a marked man. The church would try to interfere with religion in Hungary any way it could. For example, in 1948, the Hungarian people were celebrating the 10th anniversary of the International Eucharistic Congress, which had been held in Budapest 10 years earlier. There were great processions through the streets of Budapest. The communist government saw to it that only a few trains were scheduled to go into Budapest on the day of the festivities. And they would oftentimes offer lower rates for people going to, the government had often lower rates for people going to religious observances. The communists cut all of that out and said, no, if you want to go, you pay standard rates and you go on the one or two trains that will be going into Budapest because there will be no more. You see, that's the way they would interfere with everything the church was trying to do. They also began an active campaign against the cardinal, and they used this slogan, "We will annihilate Menzetiism. The well-being of the Hungarian people and peace between church and state depend upon it." So school children and factory workers were ordered into the streets to demonstrate against Cardinal Menzeti. Factory workers and members of the Communist Party formed a procession to the Episcopal Palace, if you will, and stood outside and protest the actions of the cardinal. The people did not want to be doing that. Of course, they were being forced into it. Well, finally, the cardinal was himself caught up with. And he tells the story. They drove into the yard, it would be of his home, and they turned their whole column of cars around, ready for instant departure. They noisily trampled into the house, and with thudding boots, approached my apartment on the first floor. I was kneeling on the preju, praying and meditating. The door flew open. Police Colonel Deshi entered. In a state of high agitation, he confronted me and declared, "We have come to arrest you." 8 or 10 police officers thronged after him into the room. I was surrounded by them when I demanded that they show me the warrant for my arrest. "Oh, we do not need anything like that," they responded back. One of them added that the Democratic police were alert and could find traitors, spies, and currency smugglers even when they wore cardinal's robes. The cardinal was taken to number 60 Andrassy Street in Budapest, the headquarters of the secret police. And it's interesting to read his description of the headquarters. Here, Hungarians who had been taught their trade by Hitler's Gestapo had already created, during the period of German occupation, a gruesome place of torture, a cruel center of terror. It would be no different for Cardinal Menzeti. He was subject to the grossest personal humiliation. He was stripped of his clothing. He was tortured. He was brainwashed. He was interrogated over and over again. A sample would go like this. "What is your name?" The cardinal responded. "Where and when were you born?" He responded again. "What is your occupation?" He responded again. "How did you become an enemy of our country?" The cardinal gave his background and said as far as he knew, he was no enemy of the country. He was a friend of the people. "If you were a friend of the people, you wouldn't be here," the communist said. And the cardinal responded, The only reason I am here, the only reason anybody else ever comes here, is because they object to something on the part of the regime. Well, they kept up their interrogation. The communist colonels and officers continued by accusing the cardinal of obstructing the progress of the Hungarian people. He was then accused of trying to establish communications with the imperialists against the interests of his own country. The imperialists would, of course, be the Americans. And the cardinal replied to his communist accusers that he had been forced to open up communications with the Americans only after the Hungarian government refused to oppose infringements by the Soviet occupying power. That is why he got in touch with the Americans. The communists claimed that he had protested against the founding of the Republic, that he had met with Otto von Habsburg in the summer of 1947, and he had drawn up a proposed cabinet list for a new government, that he initiated contacts with the American embassy in Budapest to stir up a Third World War, and that he had prevented the crown of St. Stephen from being brought home to Hungary because he wanted to take the crown and crown Otto von Habsburg one more time. And on the accusations went. Cardinal Menzenti was finally brought to trial in February of 1949. The prosecution accused him of three major charges: leading an organization that was planning an overthrow of the government, engaging in espionage against the Hungarian state, and illegally using foreign currencies. The show trial, which followed, was nothing more than a piece of communist propaganda. And afterwards, of course, he was incarcerated and he remained in solitary confinement for the next 8 years. A stay in prison, he writes, can direct men's minds toward God. Solitude often revives memories of long forgotten religious truths. Even lukewarm Christians and people indifferent to religion who have forgotten how to pray and no longer perceive the need of their souls and who have neglected the commandment to keep the Lord's day holy are reunited with their Creator by attendance at the prison chapel, perhaps forever after. The cardinal went on to describe his religious life. He prayed the rosary constantly for the needs of the entire world. He prayed to so many of the saints. And then he added, "I included the concerns of everyone in my rosary prayers. Every day I prayed six rosaries." Events that contributed to the cardinal's final release from prison were, of course, the abortive Hungarian uprising in 1956. The Hungarian freedom fighters, as many of you remember, I'm sure, tried to bring freedom back. And it was the revolt in Hungary, as he says, the cardinal writes himself, was very ruthlessly suppressed. When Khrushchev dispatched an army of tanks, artillery, and very forcefully reestablished communist rule in Hungary. That is in the living memory of many of us, I am sure. Cardinal Menzenti, though, was finally under pressure released. He had 3.5 days of freedom. And then he writes, "I clambered aboard the saving deck of the American embassy to escape being carried off to the Soviet Union and to wait for the day that would once more permit me to work on behalf of my native land." President Dwight D. Eisenhower very gladly gave permission for the cardinal to take up residence at the American embassy in Budapest, where every possible courtesy was extended to him. And because of the efforts of Cardinal Francis Spellman in New York, the National Catholic Welfare Conference paid $1,000 annually for the upkeep of Cardinal Menzenti at the American Embassy, so that it could never be said that the United States government was simply keeping a Roman Catholic priest there indefinitely at taxpayers' expense. 15 years he was spent in that embassy writing his memoirs and acting as the unofficial chaplain, if you will, to the Catholics on the staff. During the Nixon years of detente, it was quite easy for the cardinal to be released. As we told you at the beginning, he spent his final years in a seminary in Vienna. But before he went, he met Pope Paul VI in Rome. Here is a guest for whom we have awaited with longing, a glorious symbol of the unity between the Hungarian Church and the Apostolic See that has existed for so long, a symbol of unshakable strength rooted in faith and in selfless devotion to the Church. He has proved this, first of all, by his tireless activity and alert love, and then by his prayer and his long suffering. That was Joseph Cardinal Menzenti, and he was the dry martyr of Hungary.